GovEvents.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Get the latest TSP numbers and Thrift Savings Plan news every day on FederalNewsRadio.com's TSP page. Go to FederalNewsRadio.com, search TSP.
Welcome to Your Turn. Mike Cozy, delighted to have you with us here. We're here every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. And tell a friend, have them listen. And remember, our shows are archived on our homepage, so you can listen to them or refer them to a friend anytime you want. Got a very interesting show today. We're always trying to follow the money. And in this case, it's a question of keeping your job, which is a good way to follow the money. My guest is Carol Bonacero. She is president of the Senior Executives Association. Been a very stressful week for Carol. Her daughter has been ill in the hospital, and I know she's busy and worried and all that. So, Carol, thank you so much for taking time out to be with us.
My pleasure as always.
Glad to have you. And you see, we got it right. I have been calling Carol Executive Director, but I have promoted her to her proper place with the Senior Executives Association. She is president. Carol, what is the SEA?
Well, it's a professional association of the top career executives in the federal government. They are, as you well know, in a very separate and distinct personnel system. And that's the reason the association was originally started. We're obviously concerned about their particular issues in that system, but also about leadership in the federal government generally.
And the SEA was created by the Carter administration as part of a civil service reform, and the idea, I gather, was to have a cadre of top executives, 6,000-7,000 career appointees, who would, kind of like the British system, who would be there to advise new political appointees when they come in to help them carry out programs.
Well, would that it were like the British system. That'd be in a lot better shape. But generally speaking, yeah. Really, the reason the SES was started is because the administration wanted more flexibility about where they could put executives, and they were unable to do that when they were in the old in the GS system.
You know, one of the great military tacticians, he's Chinese, and I won't try to pronounce it, but he said that the civilian population of a country was at the greatest danger at the beginning and at the very end of a war. And if you translate that over into the civilian population, I would think people, federal workers, to some extent, are at the greatest peril at the end of an administration or at the beginning of it when there's change and turmoil. So even though you have a transition from Obama to Obama, as the case may be, the second term is going to be very different for federal workers, isn't it?
Absolutely. Even though it's not a transition from one administration to another, it is a transition, and obviously there's going to be change. You know, some of the political appointees will have caught Potomac fever and stay on. Others will leave, but the net effect is still that many senior executives are going to have new political appointees to respond to or to break in, as some say, and certainly some changes in direction.
Well, you've got, you know, we know for sure you've got changes at the CIA, defense, interior, commerce, and even though the secretaries of agriculture and some other places have indicated they want to stay on, that doesn't mean they will keep the same team, does it?
No, it doesn't. And that's the rub. You know, the process of briefing a new appointee and learning their styles is critical. And we know there are a lot of new senior executives who may not have been through that process before, so they would certainly do well to get advice, certainly from their colleagues at a minimum.
Now, what happens? I'm a political appointee, and I come in, and I have 18 career, probably many, most of them are senior executives, but I have 18 or 19 of those under me that are going to help me, and there's a couple of them I can't stand. What options do I have?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, we did a piece called The Senior Executive Service, a Management Primer, because we know that new appointees come in, they may not even understand what the SES is. So we sort of are telling them what they can and cannot do to them. There is something called a 120-day moratorium, the get acquainted period, as it's called. So for that first 120 days, they really cannot be removed, and they can't be moved. But the fact of the matter is that, of course, they can waive their rights. So, you know, sometimes even under the best of circumstances, it just doesn't work out. And whether it's personality clash or a political point of view comes in with a dim view of career executives generally. And you know, in those cases, I think most people just say, let me move on.
Yeah, I think it surprises a lot of people who aren't in the government or are not familiar with it to think that the government operates very much like the private sector. And there are some people you like and some you don't, and some that you think are incompetent. And it's a very human operation despite all of the GSing and the levels and rules.
Sure, and some appointees come in and are stunned to find out, you mean I can't just get rid of who I want to get rid of and bring in whoever I want to bring in? So, you know, this is why some senior executives who are retirement eligible say, you know what, I've been through this enough time and I think it's time to retire.
Well, you know, one of the things that intrigues me about covering the government for as long as I have is how many top people come in, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, doesn't seem to matter the persuasion, but they come in and they're going to shake this government up and take over and make it work right and et cetera, et cetera. And when they get ready to leave, and there's no need for them to do this, in an exit interview with a reporter like myself or with other people, they'll say, these are some of the finest people I've ever worked with. And I know you know a number of cabinet officers, and I do too, who when they left to go on to a bigger, much better paying job in the private sector, they raided the civil service and took half a dozen people with them.
You know, the challenge, the big challenge, is to make that process take less time. The process of their gaining an understanding of how critical these people are to their success and how well it would serve them to work with them well. You know, the sooner they can get in that groove, the better off we all are.
I think a lot of people, again, don't have any idea how many political jobs there are in the government. You know, you think to the victor belong the spoils and go back to the Jacksonian era. But in fact, the plum book, but with the nickname of it, the so-called policy and supporting positions, every 4 years that is printed up by the administration and Congress for the use of the incoming administration, even if it's an incumbent. And they print it. It's now online. In fact, if you go to the Federal Report column today, there is a link to it. And you can take a look at it and just see exactly where these jobs are. And in most cases, you'll see the name of the incumbent in them. How many people are in the plum book? And what are the range of jobs in this plum book?
My gosh, I think it's somewhere around 8,000. And, you know, it actually includes the senior executive service positions because there are non-career senior executive service position. So obviously you have everything from the appointees who need Senate confirmation down to their aides who are lower graded but who are in Schedule C appointments.
Right, and some of these, too, they call them confidential jobs, and I know they used to be chauffeurs, I believe cooks, and people at a fairly low GS level.
Yeah, I think by and large that's gone by the wayside. But I will confess I have not looked at every page of the plum book either.
Well, I looked at Interior the other day at OPM and at the Defense Department, which has a huge number of political appointee jobs, and they run the gauntlet, and you're right, most of them are of a very high level, but there are a few confidential assistants that are, I think, at the GS-9 level, so they're not all six-figure positions.
You know, one of the concerns is, as you also well know, Mike, is that over the years, the proliferation of these political positions that have just put so many layers between career folks and the top leadership, and how that gets in the way of actually getting things done.
Yeah, well, I know that one of the complaints that I've seen of the SES is that it's not as mobile as the founders, that would be the Carter people, intended it to be. What's the deal on that?
I have a different view of that. The primary motivation was really just to move these folks around within their agencies, because when they were the so-called super grades, GS 16, 17, 18, they were bound by their position classifications, and they couldn't be moved. So even if the agency said, you know, I really need this guy or gal over there, they could be a lot more helpful to me, couldn't do it. So the primary motivation was just to enable them to be reassigned within their agencies. The fact that they might be able to move around more so across government was really a secondary condition, concern.
I remember reading some time ago that the average lifespan in the job of the SESer was a certain date, and I wanted to ask you about that after we come back from a break here on Federal News Radio.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
WTOP and the Washington Wizards are looking for the best junior broadcaster in D.C. Your child can join me, Dave Johnson, along with Glenn Consor, as we call the Wizards-Houston Rockets game Saturday, February 23rd at Verizon Center. Plus, you'll get 4 tickets to the game and dinner in the press room. To enter, kids between the ages of 8 and 14 can submit an essay telling us why they should become our Wizards junior broadcaster. We're taking entries through January 18th. For all the rules, details, and to enter, visit WTOP.com, search junior broadcaster. Good luck.
Military members receive 15% off select Sprint monthly services and for a limited time. Also receive a $50 service credit when they switch a line to Sprint. Visit a Sprint retail store in your area and mention the branch of the military for which you serve, or visit Sprint.com/DOD. Retired military and veterans are eligible for Sprint's military discount and offers under the branch in which they served.
Coverage not available everywhere ends 4/10/13, subject to 2-year agreement, activation and early termination fees and other restrictions. Service credit will be credited within 3 invoices. Restrictions apply.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Our children are exposed to violence every day, in their neighborhoods, in their schools, even in their own homes. Exposure to violence can have a devastating and lifelong impact. Through community action and leadership at the national level, we're identifying the children who need our help. I'm Attorney General Eric Holder, and I'm asking those of you who have a role in a child's life to take action. Through your attention and early intervention, we can help children in need to heal, to thrive. Together, we can change their lives and their futures.
Visit justice.gov to join the Justice Department in defending childhood.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Work in technology? The new career site PowerJobs.com is currently featuring senior-level technology positions from top companies like Accenture and Pioneering Evolution. Powered by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com is designed to connect Washington's top talent to top jobs in the region's influential industries. Visit PowerJobs.com today to start your job search. PowerJobs.com. Finally, a career site made for you.
The Association of Government Accountants National Leadership Conference is coming February 12th and 13th to the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC is the training event for developing and training government financial professionals to excel as leaders in today's competitive government market. Don't miss this opportunity to share best practices, to find solutions to shared challenges, to network with your peers, and to learn from the top financial management leaders and industry experts. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. She is president of the Senior Executive Association. It's been around a long time, and as its name implies, it represents career civil servants. What are about 7,500 career SES people, Carol?
Well, they're about 7,000, and then we view their equivalents, you know, as career executives as well, senior level, for example. So by the time you get through, you're talking about 7,800.
Right, and in the plum book that we were talking about earlier that lists the policy and supporting positions, many of them are available to an administration to appoint people, has about 8,000 jobs in it, although, as you pointed out, some of those are career incumbents and many of them are vacant. But you can go to a link in today's Federal Report column, click on the plum book, and look at the agency of your choice and see what they've got in the way of political jobs, and in most cases you can see the name of the current incumbent. Carol, we were talking before about the 120-day get-to-know-your period, get-to-know-your time when a federal executive cannot be moved or transferred by the incoming boss, and the idea is that during that couple of months, they'll get to know each other and things will work out. I remember reading some years ago a Brookings Institution study which said that the average senior, the average non-career political appointee comes into government and stays about 18 months. Does that sound right?
Well, you know, we're thinking that it may well be closer to 24 months these days on average, but I haven't seen any new data on it. So, you know, we're talking about averages. Some obviously stay a lot longer and some shorter.
I've known some that survived 8 years, the two terms, and some that even survived beyond that. But say it's 24 at the most end. That means you get a new boss. You get four bosses in 8 years? That seems to me to be a higher turnover than I find in the private sector.
Yeah, and as I say, it is tough because you know, someone's coming in with a different style, perhaps a slightly different agenda, and you have to respond to that. And, of course, hopefully the political appointees coming in with a positive view, you know, of the federal workforce, but not always. And sometimes that 120-day period may not amount to much if that political appointee really doesn't intend to get acquainted.
So. Yeah. Well, I know you've seen and I've seen examples of people who came in thinking the government was terrible and it was inhabited by dummies, and they never changed their opinion because they didn't give it a shot.
Yeah, and that really doesn't serve the administration, you know, because they're there to move the administration's agenda, and they can't get that done without the career people helping them and working with them, which is, you know, why we hope that they will communicate fully with the career executives who work with them, share their agenda, and really make it a working team.
You know, you mentioned the word agenda a couple of times, and I think of a perfect example of a first-term versus a second-term agenda with the same administration, and that was before the election. The Obama administration was very careful not to make a lot of noise about the dangers of sequestration and the government shutdown, and there was a requirement that defense contractors send out notices to their employees 60 days before a possible shutdown, advising them that they might lose their jobs within the next 60 days. And the Labor Department came out and said, no, you really don't have to send those out. They're just a formality. And if you get sued later on for not doing it, we'll pay your costs.
Wow.
So they wanted to downplay it. And then immediately after the election, then suddenly the same people who'd said, don't worry about this sequestration thing, came in and said, sequestration is awful. It's the end of civilization as we know it. We've got to get a handle on it. So that's an agenda change within the same administration.
Indeed. And as I say, a lot of these folks, as you point out too, have been through this a number of times. And, you know, the ones who have been through it are more attuned to it. And some are obviously very skillful at dealing with that transition. But that's still no guarantee that you're going to have a good relationship with the next person who pops into that position.
Yeah, I know I pressed you earlier for some tips. There are five things you should do if you want to have great hair. There are six foods you eat if you want to lose weight. Have a bikini-ready body for the summer and all that. And I wanted to ask you for some tips for executives and people to survive. But what's the most common problem that career federal executives encounter when an administration changes and or they get a new boss, as is likely to happen for most career executives?
Well, I don't know that there's any one most common one, but particularly at a change of administration, one party to another, it is not at all unusual that career executives are viewed with suspicion. You know, you did too good a job for the last administration, not understanding or refusing to accept the fact that they're there to do their best for everyone. So in this case, obviously, we shouldn't have that problem. But I think the biggest problem is when an appointee comes in who really does not come in with the attitude of, I'm going to communicate my agenda to you, I'm going to work closely with you, and we're going to have a good, open, honest working relationship. If they don't start that way, it just makes the executive's job extremely difficult.
They have the Stephen Covey book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and the five things you should do and the nine things you shouldn't do. What are your top six things for career federal executives and federal employees in coping with a new political appointee?
Sure. Well, new appointees come in with a ton of briefing materials, and obviously very often senior executives have to prepare those too. So the trick is, you know, make it as comprehensive as necessary, but not overwhelming, because they've got a lot to plow through. Be sure you alert them to any hot-button issues or major decisions that are awaiting their decisions, because you don't want them blindsided.
Don't embarrass the boss, right?
Yeah, well... Don't let the boss embarrass himself or herself.
Mm-hmm.
Make an effort to really learn the appointee's style and preferences early on. And if they don't share that, ask. Recognize they have a political agenda with a short time to accomplish it while you have a longer-term view. When you bring unpleasant news or advice regarding restrictions, be prepared to be seen as less than helpful and hope they don't shoot the messenger. And I guess finally, remember that no matter how hard you try or how well you do, you and your new boss may not mesh. And in the end, you may be wise to accept a reassignment or to seek one.
Very good. Okay. I remember one time a White House guy telling me that President Nixon liked to have briefing papers that were just one page long, and then Secretary of State Henry Kissinger handed him two pages, and Nixon gave it back and said, I want one page, and Kissinger handed it to one of his people and said, have her type this single space.
You know, when I worked in what is now OMB, in the old executive office building, that was true of Johnson. Not only did he want things on one page, but there was a particular format. You know, you took the three sentences or whatever to lay out the issue, so many paragraphs to present the options and finally your recommendations. Well, that's what worked for him, and it did force people to really crystallize their thoughts.
Learn and survive. Well, thank you very much for being with us today, Carol. I hope your daughter gets better real soon. We'll talk to you later on. Thanks, Carol Bonacero. Going to take a short break, and we'll be back here talking with the Federal Times guys about a variety of things.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
Eagle Hoops fans, the best seats in Bender Arena for the 2012-2013 season are just a phone call away. Call the AU Athletics ticket office at 202-885-TIXX today to place your $50 deposit on 2012-2013 season tickets to see AU Eagles men's basketball. Season tickets are the only way to secure the best sideline reserve chair back seats all season long. Place your season ticket deposit at 202-885-TIXX today and buy American.
This is an urgent message for all individuals with extremely large credit card debt. No matter how much you owe on your credit cards, the company that has settled more debt than anyone in the U.S. could settle your debt too. While you make one low monthly program payment, you have the opportunity to hear how low your monthly program payment could be for free. This free information is available now simply by calling Freedom Debt Relief at 1-800-700-6518. I repeat, if you have extremely large credit card debt, you now have the ability to reduce your total debt and get one simple low monthly program payment. This could allow you to resolve your debt faster than you ever thought possible. But you should act quickly. Call Freedom Debt Relief now to learn how much you could save. 1-800-700-6518. Again, this life-changing information is available for free. To find out how much you may be able to save, call today. 1-800-700-6518. That's 1-800-700-6518. 1-800-700-6518.
Experience and stability, the two most important things when picking a website development partner. As one of Washington's largest website development companies, AmericanEagle.com, an industry leader, has completed projects for thousands of organizations, associations, businesses, and the government, from the local to the highest federal level. AmericanEagle.com's GSA schedule makes it easy to quickly order website design and development services. They also provide reliable and secure hosting solutions in their PCI-compliant data center. Whether you're a local, state, or federal agency, your website is likely the top communication tool used by your constituents. AmericanEagle.com understands the importance of governmental efforts for the public good and will customize solutions for your agency to ensure the continuity and success of your online operations. For federal government clients, please see their GSA schedule and explore some of their government websites at AmericanEagle.com. For any of your website development needs, including hosting and maintenance after your launch, call 703-WEBSITE. That's 703-WEBSITE.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. What is NIH doing to advance biomedical research? What's being done to ensure the soundness of the country's credit union system? How can government better manage risks, reduce waste, and use resources more wisely? What are some of the key issues for governing in the next 4 years? Tune into the Business of Government magazine next week and find out. Hear from government executives next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Each year, a vaccine against new flu viruses needs to be made, and some people who get a shot still get sick. But soon, just one vaccination might protect against all flu strains. Most flu vaccines use whole viruses, inactivated or weakened. But Joseph Kim, CEO of Inovio Biomedical Corporation, says all that's needed to prompt immunity is a piece common to all flu viruses. Their computer programs select key DNA from many viruses that, strung together,
serves as a blueprint for an actual vaccine that gets manufactured inside your own cells.
To help the DNA get into cells, Inovio has engineered a system which gives tiny electric pulses with the injection.
That's enough to open up the pores of your cell membrane, and the pores close up. This has shown to enhance immune responses.
Kim says one shot might last several years, and human trials are underway. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Causey. Welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. We've got another half hour to go here, and we've rounded up the usual suspects, our friends from the Federal Times, senior writers Stephen Losey and Sean Riley. Gents, you with us?
Good morning. How
are
you doing?
Hey, glad to have you here. Hey, I noticed you two have been busy collaborating this week, looking at issues of the Federal Times. Got a story about the Defense Department prepping for furloughs. What's this all about, and is this serious, or is this more Washington drama?
A little bit of both, I think. I think it's definitely serious. At the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if policymakers over in the Defense Department were hoping that members of Congress would take notice that you're talking, you know, potentially talking about hundreds of thousands of DOD civilian employees being, you know, getting some unpaid time off. You know, the as we've discussed before, the actual due date for sequestration was pushed back from January 2nd until March 1st, but it's, you know, the possibility is still definitely out there. And on January 10th, the Deputy Defense Secretary Ashton Carter put out a memo for the entire department, essentially saying to go ahead and start planning for sequestration. You know, consider hiring freezes, furloughs, early out programs, et cetera. And so what you had very quickly was a response from the three services, essentially pursuing pretty much those steps, or putting in place hiring freezes, making ordering agencies or the service ordering components to look at review contracts for cost savings, cut back on conference spending, travel, basically anywhere where they could cut without endangering the mission, and also consider the possibility of furloughs. And the most detailed guidance came out of the Navy, where a Rear Admiral wrote that, you know, at this point, employees should assume that furloughs would begin on a one-day-a-week basis starting April 16th and continue for the rest of the fiscal year through September.
So that's, so that's how many days? I know at one point we were talking about 22.
That's what it would be. It would be 22.
It would be
the
22.
Before then, they start having to, you know, essentially have to begin having to treat it in terms of notification as if it were a reduction in force.
Right. And without buying into this, if it is a scare tactic, the advantage to the government of furloughing people one day a week, in addition to the continuity of the job and the work, is that they wouldn't have to pay, they wouldn't have to go through a reduction in force procedure, which is costly, and people wouldn't be going out and getting unemployment, correct?
I think so. I'm not sure about what the, in terms of unemployment, what's possible, but certainly in terms of the advantage over a RIF, obviously, if you RIF somebody, they're separated, they're gone, and if you need them in the future, then you'll have to go through the process of rehiring them, which is obviously time-consuming. And also, as I understand it, when somebody is RIF, then you have to pay them their unpaid leave. You know, you have to cover their unpaid leave balance or their outstanding leave balances, and so it can be quite expensive.
Well, other than the political back and forth, the game of chicken playing, I can't see any upside to having this kind of uncertainty. And even if we know that they might, and they do indeed, kick the can down the road, just this uncertainty, what they've done, they bought more time, but that stretched out the deadline from January 2nd to, and now you say it's April. I mean, isn't this a real problem for not only for federal workers but for the contractors?
Oh, I think absolutely. For federal employees, I was talking to the CFO at a major agency a few weeks ago, where they basically said they are not going to furlough anybody. But it turns out when they read, you know, stories like ours about, you know, DOD going ahead with, you know, or at least planning for the possibility of furloughs, they get concerned. And their first question, as this official put it, was, what about us? So you have a lot of time spent, I think, on handholding, on, you know, ensuring people, you know, trying to get information to people and employees understandably being worried about what's coming next. And at the same time, I think for contractors, there is a good deal of uncertainty about what, you know, particularly for smaller ones, what's going to happen regarding, you know, contract renewals, you know, exercise of options, that kind of thing.
Well, and as you've both pointed out before, in the past, when workers were not furloughed, but when government was shut down for something like the debt ceiling and people got 3, 4, 5 days off, they were made whole. So they got paid for that time. But, of course, in the case of a furlough, one of the purposes of the furlough is to eliminate that payroll. So people, if it came to a worst-case scenario and they were furloughed for 22 days, they can count on getting paid for a four-day week, not a five-day week.
That's all they could count on. Now, it could be, you know, Congress, as they did in 95, after the 95-96 shutdowns, could vote, you know, to retroactively make them whole, given that it wasn't their decision to take take the time off. But of course, there's no guarantee. As we all know, with Congress in the last few years, there are simply no guarantees.
Well, and I think you've got an exceptionally hostile Congress here, particularly the House side, the Republican-led side. There are many people who just don't like the government and don't like government workers. And I would think if you were the CFO of the agency you were talking to, and he said we're not planning any furloughs, and then he reads in the Federal Times or Federal News Radio that defense is talking about 22 days, I can see various members of Congress putting these stories side by side and saying, "What's going on here? Maybe you're overstaffed if you don't need to furlough."
Yeah, well, they should take into account, though, that agencies are funded in different ways. There are agencies, for example, that don't get, you know, most of their revenue doesn't come from tax dollars. It comes from fees, you know, user fees or other sources of revenue that don't, you know, directly come from the public, so would not necessarily be affected as directly by sequestration as, say, a department like defense.
That's right. Yeah, you do have control of the currency, and FDIC that do get their funds from elsewhere. They're sort of immune to this. As to the matter of being paid back if there's a shutdown, although they did pay people, they made them whole in the 95-96 shutdown. Last year, when FAA had to furlough some people or lay off some people for a period of time, the Congress intentionally did not vote them funds, and the FAA had to get the money from DOT. Isn't that right?
Right. Well, DOT attorneys decided that, you know, Congress didn't act, and DOT attorneys finally decided that they didn't need congressional action, as it turned out, and so the employees were made whole, but it was not because of any specific congressional action.
Right. You know, I bet if that had been with a large group of FAA employees rather than just a relatively small number of medical personnel, somebody in Congress might have questioned that, you know, the executive branch usurping the powers or the intent of the legislative branch.
Possibly. I was surprised, actually, that it didn't get, there wasn't questioned, but I think in some ways this... I think there were a lot of members of Congress who, even though they wouldn't have voted to make these employees whole retroactively, they were not unhappy that DOT went ahead and did it on its own. And I wouldn't also not be surprised if DOT privately consulted members, lawmakers.
Can we do this? Huh?
Yeah, can we do this?
Yeah.
And basically they kind of gave an implicit go-ahead.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a lot more give and take between the career government and the legislative branch than we're led to believe, and that would be smart. Switching subjects here, and again, I guess another double byline for you and Steve is the combined federal campaign. The contributions are down, and that's understandable because, you know, you've had 2.5 years of pay freezes now, so maybe people are feeling the pinch. Health premiums are going up. Other things are going up. Taxes went up this year, but the contributions are down. And also the combined federal campaign is under more scrutiny from OPM, at least OPM, if not others. What's that all about?
Yeah, it kind of looks like sort of a perfect storm kind of situation for a disappointing CFC year. As you said, the contributions are down. We went and did a lot of surveying of campaigns across the country, most of the biggest campaigns, and very few of them have beaten their goals for 2012. Most of them are down, some considerably so, such as Los Angeles, Southern California, Dallas-Fort Worth. We're seeing double-digit drops from where they hope to be. And considering the fact that for 2012, for the first time, many campaigns were dropping their goals from what they made last year, it's especially disappointing. We're looking at what could be the worst year for the CFC in at least 6 years, maybe more. We won't know until final numbers come in, but it's looking very disappointing, kind of, you know, virtually across the board for the CFC.
It's fascinating to me to see things on a city-by-city basis. You know, they talk about unemployment being worse in Nevada and these kinds of things. You mentioned Los Angeles and the metro area and Dallas-Fort Worth as cities, and they're major federal cities, too, where the CFC is down. What are some others?
Well, the Heartland. Mm-hmm. CFC, which is in Kansas City, is down 8%. Chesapeake Bay is down about 5%. Chicago down about 6%. You know, I talked to the woman who runs the New York City CFC, and she wouldn't give me hard numbers on how much they have collected so far, but she said that they hoped to make 75% of their goal. So wherever they are now, it's below 75%, which is very, very disappointing, which very much disappointed her.
Well, in the past, from time to time, somebody would try to organize a boycott of the combined federal campaign for various reasons. Either the White House or the president was doing something to them, or even an individual agency, maybe to, quote, punish or embarrass the agency head. But I haven't heard of any concerted effort to get people to boycott. Have you?
No, I haven't heard anything like that. I think in cases like New York City, Superstorm Sandy just socked them right in the heart of their campaign season, and so many federal employees, their offices were closed. They lost everything in the storm. So that really hurt New York City badly.
Those of us who didn't go through that, and we just missed the bullet here in the D.C. area, don't have a clue as to how bad it is. Have to take a short break. Talking with Steve Losey and Sean Riley from the Federal Times. We'll be right back. What you don't know about federal pay, benefits, and retirement can cost you. Get the answers you need with a free copy of the white paper, Frequently Asked Questions About Your Federal Benefits, from the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, NARF. Download your free copy at fedfacts.org. Let NARF experts on federal benefits and tireless advocates for all feds unravel the complex and confusing rules and requirements you encounter every day in this free guide. Download yours today at fedfacts.org. That's fedfacts.org.
Come back to Foggy Bottom for homecoming at the George Washington University on February 9th and 10th in 2013. Join GW Men's Basketball on Saturday, February 9th, when they take on the Butler Bulldogs and commemorate the 20th anniversary of their trip to the Sweet 16. The GW Women play Butler on Sunday and celebrate the 40th anniversary of Title IX. Visit gwsports.com/homecoming and get your homecoming tickets today.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO, Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliant contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
On Saturday, February 9th, 2013, the Northern Virginia chapter of the Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association will host the 33rd edition of the annual FCA Nova Valentine's Ball. This fun social event will mix and mingle 700 industry, military, federal government, telecommunications, and IT professionals at the elegant and newly remodeled Tyson's Sheraton Premier. Enjoy dining, dancing, all while bumping elbows with some of the brightest minds in the industry. For more information, visit fcanova.org.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Federal employees receive 15% off select Sprint monthly services and for a limited time may be eligible to receive a $50 service credit when they switch a line to Sprint. Visit a Sprint retail store in your area and mention where you work to find out if you are eligible, or visit Sprint.com/Fed. That's Sprint.com/FED.
Coverage not available everywhere ends 4/10/13, subject to 2-year agreement, activation and early termination fees and other restrictions. Service credit will be credited within 3 invoices. Restrictions apply.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey. I'm talking with Stephen Losey and Sean Riley from the Federal Times. And just I know we're in the news business. We're in the business of reporting gloom and doom, and bad news is good news and all that. But a couple of weeks back, I remember talking with both of you, and we were talking about the perils of sequestration and the federal, possibly the extension of a federal pay freeze, and you both said that, you know, reminded that Congress can do anything it wants, and that it's possible that sequestration in some could even go away. And lo and behold, it was upon us, and now it's gone away at least for a couple of months.
That's right. Yeah, they pushed sequestration back 2 months as a part of the whole fiscal cliff deal. It was struck on New Year's, What we're starting to conclude is that no matter how this whole sequestration mess is resolved, whether maybe it goes into effect, maybe they don't strike a deal and it goes into effect, or maybe they do strike a deal to avoid sequestration. But one way or another, money is going to be cut from the federal budget as part of, you know, if sequestration is resolved. So it's not. I was talking to Henry Romero, who used to be the Office of Personnel Management, about this, and he said, you know, something along the lines of, it's not going to be like, okay, we struck a deal on sequestration, now the money spigots turn back on. The government is going to have to hunker down for a long period of fiscal austerity. That's going to happen one way or another. So we're thinking that even if sequestration doesn't happen, furloughs are looking likely. More early outs are looking like, probably not buyouts because that costs money up front, but more early outs are likely. So no matter which way you slice it, it's not going to be good for the federal workforce.
It's not going to be as disastrous as it could have been, but happy days are not here again. Huh?
Exactly.
Okay.
And if I could chime in here, going back to the Defense Department, you know, when Ashton Carter put out his memo on January 10th, one thing he noted in there is that DOD, like other federal agencies, is currently under a 6-month continuing resolution that runs through basically through the end of March and keeps spending it more or less at fiscal 2012 levels. And Carter noted that even that at its the Defense Department's current rate of spending, it won't have enough money if that CR is continued throughout the rest of the fiscal year, which is certainly a possibility. So even if sequestration doesn't happen, Steve noted cuts are coming.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you have the continuing resolution, which in the case of, well, in all the agencies, means they can spend at 2012 fiscal year levels. But in that case, they were spending at 2011 or 2010 or 2009 because it's been so long since Congress has approved budgets and appropriations for everybody. Isn't that right?
Well, they're now working under caps that were set by the Budget Control Act that was passed in 2011, and those essentially set a ceiling on how much discretionary spending the government can put out each year, and those caps rise very slowly. But essentially, you know, once adjusted for inflation, it essentially means that spending is more or less going to be level for some time to come.
Right. Well, we were looking at a vote in the House, I believe, on continuing the federal pay freeze, and suddenly that went away, and it's been replaced by action on Congress. Right.
That's right. The pay freeze bill was on the docket for this week. they decided to shelve it to take up the deal, kind of suspending the debt ceiling for a couple of months. So there's no word yet on when the federal pay freeze is going to come back on the docket, but I'm sure it will come back sooner or later. But yeah, as part of this whole debt ceiling deal, it does contain a proposal to, you know, withhold lawmakers' pay until they sort this whole budget mess out, which, you know, nothing's worked so far, but maybe this will. But, you know, given the fact that a lot of these guys are very wealthy, they have
exactly
vast investments, they have money that comes in, you know, their congressional pay is kind of the cherry on top. So it might, you know, ding them a little bit, but they're not going to be hurting.
They can eat out one night a week less. You have a Senate that's half of the members or more are millionaires, and the House has a large number of people. There are very few that really depend on their congressional salaries now.
That's right.
And at least four members living and sleeping in their offices, too, which is, yeah, I find fascinating. Wouldn't be a show if we didn't talk about the newest chapter on the postal drama, what's happening to the second largest and the fastest shrinking federal agency, the U.S. Postal Service.
Mike, I thought you'd never ask.
Gotta have it.
Actually, the latest is that the Postal Service put out a rather cryptic news release last week saying that its Board of Governors had met earlier this month and instructed the Postal Service to accelerate cost-cutting measures as well as new efforts to generate revenue. So far, though, the Postal Service hasn't said exactly what those are, leading to some speculation that they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. But they did announce last week, in this regards, previously announced plans to basically cut the size of the mail processing plant network, which last year was around 460 plants across the country, to cut it in half over 3 years. That effort was suspended back in August, basically, so to avoid disrupting election year mail and the holiday shipping season. It's starting up again this month. The Postal Service had planned to consolidate 82 plants this year, and they decided to move up, to basically speed up that schedule, add 18 plants for a total of 100, and these 18 were going to be consolidated next year. Now, they say this has nothing to do with the Board of Governors directive, all the timing was certainly coincidental at best, and so we're still waiting to see exactly what this new cost-cutting order from the board, you know, actually means in practice. We could find out something next week.
Well, and when you talk about eliminating or consolidating, in addition to the factory, the plant disappearing or being sold to somebody else, you're talking about a lot of people who will either be redundant, or if they keep their jobs, they could have a very long commute, I would think.
That's right. I mean, they're protected in many cases by no layoff provisions in union contracts, but they can be what's called excessed, something I'd never heard used as a verb before.
Mm-hmm.
Before I started covering the Postal Service, and that essentially means that they can keep their job. You know, they can keep working with the Postal Service, but they might have to work at someplace else. You know, 50 miles away, they might have to take a different type of job than they're doing in the past. Now, I talked to the president of the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, which represents a lot of the people working in these plants. He was hopeful. You know, they've had two buyouts in the last year for mail handlers and clerks and other employees represented by the Mail Handlers Union and the American Postal Workers Union. He was hoping that those buyouts have led enough people to leave voluntarily that there'll be vacancies created. Essentially, there'll be vacant jobs within that enough vacant jobs created that folks who are affected by this new accelerated downsizing won't have to move or won't have to move as far.
I was talking to somebody last week. That's a woman who does not work for the government, has never worked for the government, and isn't into the kind of things we talk about and write about. But she brought up the fact that the Postal Service is required to pre-fund its retirement program. And she thought it was very unfair, and I was, you know, dumbstruck that anybody outside of our narrow little world would know about that. But is that true?
Well, they're required to pre-fund the retiree health care.
Health,
benefits.
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, and yeah, that is absolutely true. And I too am a little surprised that anyone who's not working on, isn't work for the Postal Service or covered for a living was familiar with this. But this has been a major, major bone of contention for the Postal Service and its unions. Congress back in 2006 decided it would be a good idea to have the Postal Service essentially build up a fund over the course of about 10 years to provide for, to make sure essentially that future retirees' health benefits are already paid for, therefore eliminating any risk that taxpayers would have to pick up the tab. The problem is, you know, the Postal Service was okay with that back in 2006, but they're almost immediate, almost at exactly that point, mail volume started to go off a cliff.
You got the last word here. Laura Larson is giving us the signal. She's cruel but fair, so get out of here. Thank you very much. We'll see you guys next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Thank
Federal News Radio's Mike Causey is on Twitter. Follow him at MCauseyWFED for his latest columns covering federal pay, benefits, and retirement. At MCauseyWFED.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington.
NBC News Radio, I'm Peter Alexander at the White House. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on the hot seat this hour as she gives her long-awaited testimony on Benghazi, Libya, and that September attack that killed